What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out podcast on this beautiful Thursday afternoon. May 21st, went outside today, 80 plus degrees. Hopefully wherever you are, the sun is shining. I know many people listening, your states are open. You can go to restaurants, you can live life. I know state of California, counties left and right around me opening up. Feels like we're trending in the right direction. Been a long 60 plus days, but it does feel like there's some light at the end of the tunnel. It's okay to smile. It's okay to celebrate, you know, businesses reopening. Only place in the world where that's a polarizing topic would be on social media. But feels like we got the train back on the tracks, which I don't know if we could have said about a month ago, but there's still some football stuff going on, even mid-quarantine, as the OTAs are basically canceled and everyone's Zoom meeting. We had the big story that was making its waves was about Jay Glazer's comments on Taysom Hill, and it kind of blew up on the different shows, and I'll dive into that off the top. Someone reached out and like, Middlecoff, Coward does a herd hierarchy every week during the season. You should do one too. And I'm like, well, I'm not big into stealing other people's ideas. I like to be, you know, creative and figure out my own things. Though, that is a genius idea. I mean, he's had some genius ideas, maybe why he's the best in the business. But one thing I was thinking of, why don't we do this? And maybe we'll do this when the season starts. I don't know about every week, but maybe we could revisit it once a month, or maybe every other week. I don't know. We'll see. The great part about podcasts, you can do whatever the hell you want. I thought we'll do my Elite Eight, and we'll call it Middlecoff's Elite Eight, and I'll take the best four teams from the AFC and the best four teams from the NFC, and I'll rank them 1 through 4. And maybe we could revisit it every month in the fall. That's kind of what I was thinking, but who knows? We'll see where the wind takes us. Again, podcast. And then, of course, Middlecoff Mailbag, at John Middlecoff is my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle. Direct messages are open. Ask a question. It's the people's show. We take your questions on the show, read them. For those of you guys that have been listening, you know the deal. DM's wide open. Fire in there if you want to ask a question. And also, I appreciate everyone doing this, and I know a lot of you guys have been active doing this, is the Apple review section of the Three and Out podcast. A lot of you guys have left reviews. Appreciate it. We're well over 1,000 now. If you could, if you haven't, I'd greatly appreciate it. And, you know, 5-star if you want. If not, you know, it's on you. But a lot of you guys have left nice reviews. I appreciate that. And yeah, keep telling your friends about the podcast. But let's start with this. Big story on Thursday. I guess I think I read it late last night on Wednesday, but it kind of blew up on Thursday. Was Jay Glazer, who Fox superstar, you know, kind of like I'd say him, Schefter, Woj. There's a select few reporters that are unique. A large percentage of the reporters that you follow on Twitter, and I do too, they are just talking to agents. So they just get the player side of it. And you see it a lot in the NBA. I like a good, well-rounded reporter. Like, I'm not looking for, like, a lot of reporters are basically relievers. They got one pitch. The Schefters, the Glazers, the Wojes, they're talking to everybody. They got every single GM and coach's number in their phone. And Jay Glazer knows them all, and he's very tight with the Saints. He knows Sean Payton very, very well. So what he's saying, I do believe he believes what he's saying. And I don't even disbelieve that he's been told this. I mean, he's telling the truth here. Jay Glazer said that Taysom Hill will be the guy in 2021. That's not a smokescreen. He'll be the guy. Quote. And listen, he said that Sean Payton loves him and all that. It's just, okay. My one big pet peeve of mine in life is judging people on words. You see it a lot on social media. People love getting on their moral high horse. Listen, I see it a lot in California. People love telling you about how they're living, how their way of life is the right way. And it's like the Bob Knight way of coaching. Do as I say, not as I do. It's my mom always gets mad at me. She's like, you are too honest. Why do you swear so much? I'm like, Mom, every time I've ever recorded anything, every time I've ever gone live on Periscope, anytime I've ever done anything on a podcast, I have been as honest and completely candid about what's really going on in my life as possible. And sometimes some people are going to like it, some people are not, but I am not a fraud. I despise frauds. And I think, let's face it, I would say a majority of people are pretty fraudulent, especially the majority of, like, you know, celebrities or media people. And it's just not, I hate that because I don't judge anyone by what they say. I really, now listen, I mean, your songs or your radio show, I mean, I want to be entertained, but I'm not looking for moral guidance by words. And you see it a lot in society. And you also see it a lot in football. Coaches all the time and executives say things all the time. And it's not often very true. Ryan Pace, when the season ended with the Chicago Bears, said Mitch Trubisky is going to be the starting quarterback. And technically, he's still the starting quarterback. They just went and traded for Nick Foles, right? Like a lot of people tell you, you should pay more money in taxes. Celebrities and super rich people. And then what do they tell their accountant? Find every single loophole so I don't have to pay. Again, I just judge people on action. Remember Kaepernick? When Seattle was going to sign him and John Harbaugh was thinking about signing him. And they all said, oh, I think he's a starting quarterback. And then nobody signed him. Like, no, you don't. You're just saying that because you think it's going to. And a lot of people in public jobs, including the media, like saying things because they think it looks good. Me personally, I like saying things that I think people can relate to because that's how I actually think. And, you know, most people I know think. Doesn't mean everyone's going to agree. But I try to be very, very real. And I think there's an element that Sean Payton really, really likes him. I would not argue that. Sean Payton really, really likes Taysom Hill. But last year, Teddy Bridgewater was the highest paid backup quarterback in the NFL. And what happened? Drew Brees got hurt. Teddy Bridgewater became the starting quarterback, not Taysom Hill. And you can tell me, well, John, he plays running back. He plays punt protector. He does so much. Yeah, find someone else to do that. Quarterback's more important than your punt protector. So if you think Taysom Hill is better than Teddy Bridgewater, Taysom Hill should have been the quarterback. But they didn't think that because they paid Teddy Bridgewater $7 million to be the backup. And you go, okay, this is the year. Drew Brees signs a contract with NBC. He's going to be, they claim, in the studio. If there was a prop bet that you could bet that Mike Tirico and Drew Brees will be the Sunday night broadcast crew, let's see, it's 2020. I'd say by 2023, I would have no hesitation putting a wager on that one because that's happening. But he's gone. This is going to be his last year. At least it feels like that way. But here's what I know. They signed Jameis Winston. And here's what I know about Jameis Winston. He was a number one overall pick as a quarterback. Last year, he threw 7 million interceptions. He also did throw 33 touchdowns. And I'll promise you this. If I had to win a game next year, if I needed a starting quarterback next year, if I needed to bet on a guy for the next 5 years, if I had an elite quarterback coach, which they do in Sean Payton, and an infrastructure and a culture of playing quarterback there, and a guy to be around Drew Brees, I'd bet on Jameis Winston over Taysom Hill. So again, they've said all this, and they've been saying since last year how much they love this guy. They just gave him a 2-year contract and guaranteed him $16 million. So they have him under contract for next year. Now, granted, they only gave Jameis a 1-year contract. But what if they find out this year, they go, wow, Jameis is around Drew Brees, and Drew Brees is telling Sean, like, this guy's really impressive. And then he's in the practice field. He's playing well. Let's say Drew gets hurt again. Here's what I do know. Jameis Winston will be the starting quarterback that given week if Drew Brees goes down. I promise you that. Because Jameis Winston's a better quarterback than Taysom Hill. Now, he also has some flaws, and maybe there's an upside. Here's what I also know. If you're like Taysom Hill's this kind of raw product, you know who's a bunch of raw product he had to mold? Was Steve Young. You know what they used to do with Steve Young? Play him at quarterback. He also could do a lot of other things. They played him at quarterback, developed him as a quarterback. This guy does not ever develop as a quarterback. Maybe he doesn't practice. In the games, he's carrying the ball, catching the ball. To play quarterback, you actually have to, I don't know, play quarterback. So we're freaking out, and I understand it because words and headlines move the needle. They get us all to react, including myself. I'm just as guilty. I'm not pretending to not. I mean, I get worked up about stupid stuff as much as the next guy. But here's what, after I take a deep breath, I try to say to myself, I don't give a shit what they're saying. Does it even matter? Because I don't think he probably will be the quarterback. They can say it, and they might even believe that. But their actions always tell you that that's not what they're actually thinking. Why do they keep signing actual quarterbacks? Teddy Bridgewater, who was a first-round pick, whose knee fell off, who they rehabilitated, and got $60 million. It was pretty good. I mean, he started all those games, they won a bunch. Jameis Winston, who's been in their division, who they've played twice a year for the last, you know, whatever, 5 years, so he played 10 times. Unless he one of the games he was suspended, I'd have to go back and check. But let's just assume they played him 10 times over the last 5 years. Actual Jameis, like, Sean Payton knows him pretty well. So they can tell me whatever they want. People say, especially in football, the stupidest things. And then they often do something else. And I only judge football teams. I only judge general managers. I only judge head coaches. Just like I only judge the media elites and celebrities and athletes on their actual actions. I don't care what they say. You know, I just don't. It doesn't bother me at all. And it's something I've had to, you know, work on as I've gotten older. But, you know, we get so freaked out about it. One thing I see is going on social media right now is they're making fun of that Karen. And she's just kind of symbolic of every person that doesn't want to wear a mask. Here's what I know. And everyone's ganging up on that person, right? Whenever you complain about wearing a mask. I understand if you're told to wear a mask, you got to wear a mask. Like, that's just part of the deal. But if you're complaining about wearing a mask and you're like crushing them, here's what I know. There is not one person in my life, not one single person that I know, not on social media, no, in actual real life that doesn't hate wearing masks. And the moment they are told you don't have to wear a mask anymore, they will never wear a mask again. Now, they're wearing masks where they have to. They're not breaking laws here. Every single person I know hates it. Yet on social media, it's like a cool thing to wear a mask. It's classic social media. Just like this is classic football talk. Like, great little headline. Yeah, they signed Jameis Winston. If Drew Brees breaks his ankle tomorrow, Jameis will be the starter. Taysom will be the punt protector. And then they'll have to sign another quarterback to be the backup because Taysom couldn't even be the backup. So this Taysom Hill thing, I'm not saying there's not something there. He's a really good football player. He's like a poor man's Kyle Juszczyk, you know? But Kyle Juszczyk is a fullback. We keep acting like this guy's the next Steve Young or something. He's 30 years old. He tore his ACL like 3 times in college. And now he has a nice little niche. He's getting, you know, 2-year contract at $16 million guaranteed. Made some cash. Great story. Props to Sean Payton. Just stop worrying about, like, the hype on this guy and just wait till he actually starts the game. Because I'm waiting, you know? And I'm pretty sure we're going to be waiting a while. Okay, here's something we'll do. People have been asking for this, who you think are the best teams. Can you rank the teams? We've had an offseason. We had free agency. We had the draft. Where did everything shake up? What I decided to do, and we're going to call it the Middlecoff Elite Eight. It's my Elite Eight, but it's not a true Elite Eight because I picked the top 4 teams from the NFC and the top 4 teams from the AFC. And so I picked 8 teams. But I think we'd all agree, because you don't need to be Bill Walsh to figure this out, the NFC is way better than the AFC. And I think it's fair to say that maybe my third AFC team would crack the top 8 if we did a true league, but I'm going to go Elite 8. I'm going to break it down by conference. So we'll call it the Middlecoff Elite 8, and we'll start in the AFC. And number 1 in the AFC, to me, is pretty easy. They won the Super Bowl. They have Patrick Mahomes. They returned 20 of 22 starters. They had a sweet running back in the draft. They had a sweet linebacker, Willie Gay Jr., in the draft. They have Andy Reid. They bring all their coaches back. They're really freaking good. I would not be shocked to see the Kansas City Chiefs win another Super Bowl. I think they're the heavy favorite for a reason going into this season. They're going to be really good. They've been really good for the last, basically since Andy Reid showed up. They've gone to a completely different level since they drafted Patrick Mahomes. I don't see why anything would stop. Now, the pushback, now granted, they went 11-5 last year, though Mahomes was banged up. Division's going to be good. The AFC West, I don't know who's going to be the second best team, but you could make a case for all 3 teams. And when the dust settles, wouldn't shock me if they get 2 and maybe 3 teams competing to make the playoffs. I mean, I think Drew Lock's going to be good. And the Broncos went 7-9 last year and started terribly. They had a really good draft, a good offseason. Chargers have talent, blue chip talent everywhere. They came out of the draft with a stud quarterback in Kenneth Murray, and the Raiders were feisty last year. Now, they don't compete very well with the Chiefs, but that division's really good. I still like Kansas City against any team in the AFC in the playoffs, and then the Super Bowl, as you saw, they come back from 10 points. Number two's pretty easy, too. Now, I'm going to put a caveat on the Baltimore Ravens. Their roster's really good, and they might end up having a better record than Kansas City. I don't care. I look at them a little bit right now like the Houston Rockets in the NBA. Yeah, I no longer judge you on the regular season. You'll win 12 to 14 games. Lamar will be running around, making a ton of plays. Wink Martindale will be dialing up defensive play calls, and you'll be kicking everyone's ass. Like, oh, the Ravens, 13-3, number one seed. You got to win a playoff game. Back-to-back years, hosted playoff games. You lost. You lost them both. And last year, the Titans kicked your ass. So I'm putting them at two. They deserve to be at two. I think they're going to be really good. Their roster is really, really talented. Harbaugh wins, but you got to do something. I'm just strictly going to judge them in January. That's the only thing I care about. Now, they're a fun watch, and I think they'll win that division relatively easily, depending on who that second team, if Roethlisberger's healthy, maybe they're a couple games behind and a playoff team. Who knows about the Browns, but this is about to win in playoff games if you're the Ravens. Because everyone's like, oh, they crushed the draft. I mean, we always, the offseason, the media loves the Ravens. Eric DaCosta's friends with everyone in the media. We get it. Win a playoff game. Again, I like the Ravens, but number two, pretty easily. Three, I think we have a new, I won't say heavyweight, but team to beat in the AFC East. And I still think, I'm not counting out the Patriots with Jared Stidham, though he's pretty big unknown. I love Belichick, greatest coach ever. But I think the Buffalo Bills win the AFC East this year, and they trade for Diggs. They have a good, you know, I think Sean McDermott's one of the better young coaches that we don't really talk about that much. Maybe it's because he's bald. Maybe it's because he's not an offensive play caller. But his defense kicks people's ass. They add Zach Moss this offseason, the running back from Utah, who's a really good player. Their offense, if it can just get incrementally better, Tom Brady's, you know, gone. I saw Jim Kelly said this week, and he's right. There's no excuse anymore. Tom Brady's out of the division. If the Bills do not win the NFC East, it would be a failure. Just that simple. As harsh as that sounds, it's time for Bills Mafia and the Bills to take a next step. That's why I have them at three. During quarantine, watch that playoff game against the Houston Texans. They were working them. They were dominating that game. And then it kind of unraveled. Deshaun and DeAndre took off. But when they're on and the quarterback plays well, they're really, really good. Number four, this is a tough one, but another guy like Sean McDermott that I just don't think we talk about that much is Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel is a really good coach. 2 years ago, it was a play-in game to get into the playoffs. Mariota was hurt, and they had to start Blaine Gabbert, and they lost. This year, they benched Mariota, bring in Tannehill, start kicking everyone's butt. A.J. Brown became a stud. Their defense is just really good. Derrick Henry dominated back, didn't have to pay him, franchised him. We'll see. Maybe he holds out. I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, too much money. Only Le'Veon Bell holds out. Franchise tag is just too much cash. I just think the Titans are good. And when you look at the division, you go, yeah, the Colts could be really good. Like Chris Ballard a lot. Think Frank Wright's solid. But the Phillip Rivers, I love Phillip Rivers. But the version we saw last year was kind of a shot fighter. He wasn't bad. He was awful. In certain games, I remember watching against the Raiders. Remember that Thursday night game? He couldn't even complete a pass at the end of the game. Somehow they got like a penalty, remember, on a fourth down. They got eight plays. I don't think they gained a yard beside off penalties. He just, something's off. And there's a chance it's just over. There is a decent chance, you know, 12 months from the start of the season, he's coaching the high school team. I know he says, we'll see, we'll go year by year, but, and there's just so much, you know, weird stuff going on with the Texans. Now, Bill O'Brien wins. I think he's won that division three or four times the last 6 years. Like, he goes to the playoffs all the time. Everyone, I get Twitter hates him, but he wins a lot. Now, I think the division's better. Titans, now the Colts are solid. We'll see if he still wins it, but I would put the Titans probably getting rid of Hopkins. I gave the Titans that spot over the Houston Texans. Let's go to the NFC. Number one's pretty easy. And I get they were a one-year wonder, right? They, in Kyle Shanahan's first 2 years, I got the 49ers at one. They won I think 2 years ago, they won six games. Remember, Jimmy Garoppolo came in at the end of the season, rattled off five straight. They had one win. And the year before, when Jimmy tore his ACL, they won four. He ended up drafting number two. Well, that draft pick changed their franchise in Nick Bosa. And they have a really good roster. Joe Staley retires, who's one of the stalwarts of this franchise over the last two decades. Been the starting left tackle on multiple Super Bowl teams. He's been the starting left tackle on, I think Harbaugh won five playoff games. They won two this year. He's been a starting left tackle for a team that's won seven playoff games over the decade and played in multiple Super Bowls. So you'd say that's a massive loss. Somehow they upgraded. Trent Williams is now on their team. They add Javon Kinlaw to replace DeForest Buckner. They also kind of turned DeForest Buckner and his asset being able to trade back a spot to get Brandon Ayuk to go along with the young core of guys in George Kittle, in Deebo Samuel, in Fred Warner, in Bosa, in Jimmy Ward, who's turned into a really good player. They got a great veteran in Richard Sherman, who's still playing at a high level. They have arguably the most dynamic young coach in football. So I think the Niners are poised to just be a dominant team again. And they're the best of both worlds. They can score when they need to, and their defense is like a heavyweight fighter. They want to hit you in the mouth. Sometimes with offensive coaches, their defense can, you know, not be quite, it takes on the personality of the team, and you become much more offensive-oriented. You saw, look what happened with Coach Reed. Last year, their defense came on, they won the whole thing. Look at Sean Payton. When he's had really good teams, their defense has been good. You got to have a good defense when you're a good offensive play caller. If you give a good offensive play caller a good defense, they're going to win. Every time Andy or Sean Payton have had good defenses, they've kicked people's asses. Now, you're not going to win the Super Bowl every year, and the Niners could be better this year and not even make it back to the Super Bowl. But to me, based on the offseason, based on their core guys, based on what they added, even though they did lose some things, some of that's their own choosing, I'd put the Niners at one. Number two, I thought this was the second best team in the NFC last year, and they end up becoming the three seed, and they lost in the first round, but that was the Saints. And there was a portion during the season where I thought they were a little, you know, more well-rounded than the Niners. And then the Niners played them and beat them by 2 points, but they were both the cream of the crop, and somehow Kirk Cousins beat them. I still don't know how that happened, but it happened. I think Saints are going to be really good. They add Emmanuel Sanders. They've been desperately looking for a second wide receiver for a long time. Emmanuel's pretty good last year. When he got traded to the 49ers, he was a big reason they went on that kind of second-half run and were in the Super Bowl. And hell, if Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't throw it 5 feet too far, Niners might be champs, and Emmanuel Sanders be a hero for, you know, for the Niners. But they add him. Their defense is solid. Their whole coaching staff's coming back. Drew Brees comes back. They got Kamara and Michael Thomas in the peak of their powers. They got a really good offensive line. Division kind of sucks. The Panthers aren't going to be any good. Who knows? Falcons are just always average. I like the Saints at two. This is where it gets a little hard in the NFC. Because part of it's projecting. And I'm going to go with Philly here. Now, Philly had a million injuries last year. Their entire team was injured. But you saw at the end of the season, until he got a concussion in the playoff game, when Carson Wentz flips a switch, he might not be Mahomes, but he ain't far off. He can dominate. And they draft a first-round receiver. Alshon's coming back. Hopefully he's in a better mood. They should just, Miles Sanders now has a full year under. They'll adjust their offense a little bit. They got two really talented tight ends. They do lose Jason Peters, who's getting long in the tooth, but they're replacing him with a first-round left tackle. They have an excellent interior offensive line. They still have Fletcher Cox. They add Darius Slay. Doug Peterson has proven it in big games. He can win. I mean, up until last year, he won a playoff game, you know, the previous year against the Bears on the road with Foles again. So I like the Eagles. I like their quarterback a lot. Now, if you wanted to push back, you'd go, John, he's always hurt. And yeah, he's got to stay healthy. But when he was healthy, which he was last year, played 16 games, that second half of the season when he kind of figured it out and he's playing with Greg Ward Jr., he's playing with guys that look like me. It's like, who are these guys? Every dude's going down. Lane Johnson's out. This guy gets hurt. It didn't matter. I think Philly, if Carson can stay healthy, has a chance to be really, really good. My fourth spot. I don't like this roster that you could argue, how are you going to put Seattle above Green Bay? Or hell, even Minnesota. Dallas, too much unknown with Dak, new coaching staff, and Corona. I can't put them at four. The Rams, not quite good enough. I went Seattle. Now, I would probably just take on paper the Packers, but, you know, Seattle lost to Green Bay last year. They were another team that had a million injuries. I'm betting on the culture. I'm betting on the coach, because I'll take Pete Carroll over LaFleur any day of the week. I'll take, at this point in time, like in 2020, I'm taking Russell Wilson over Aaron Rodgers. And I just think their culture, again, they were so decimated by injuries at the end of the season, they were a shell of themselves. But never forget, they were within an inch last year, an inch, a Dre Greenlaw incredible play at the goal line of winning the NFC West. And they were not as talented as the Niners. Now they win, they pull more games out of their ass than any team probably in like sports history the last couple years. But they win every freaking year. Since Russell Wilson became the starter, they've missed the playoffs one time, and that was 3 years ago. And they went 9-7. All they do is win. And the division's going to be really tough this year. Arizona plays them well. The Rams play them well. Obviously, them and the Niners have fantastic battles. But you'll look up, and Seattle will be 10-6 or 11-5. And just of the offseason, I don't even love their offseason. You know, they're not bringing Clowney back. I don't love their pass rush. We had a corner that got arrested for something that might have robbed his own stuff back. Who even knows what's going on? But you got Russell Wilson. DK Metcalf looks like a star. Tyler Lockett's a stud. Bobby Wagner's still around. And just that culture on defense. They might have guys that you haven't really heard of. Not many, like the LOB ain't walking through that door. But I saw them live last year. And every time they tackle someone, they tackle them violently. There's a culture there that Pete has. They always compete. You can make fun of them for being, you know, kind of cheesy or whatever. Shit works because they're just really good. And you look up, and it's the second round of the playoffs, and there's the Seattle Seahawks every freaking time. And if depending on injuries, you know, if they're playing at home, all of a sudden, NFC Championship, there they are. So I would have the Niners, Saints, Philly, and Seattle as my four in the NFC. And in my AFC, the top two are easy, Chiefs and the Ravens. Then I'd go Bills and Titans. The middle cuff, Elite Eight. Okay, time to dive in to a little something we call the Middle Cuff Mailbag, at John Middle Cuff, Instagram handle. Follow it and shoot me a question. So let's attack. Hey, John, fan of the show, Ravens fan. And yes, I understand I'm biased since you begging for questions. Here's one. Here's a good one and a long one. You wrote a lot, but yeah, I like long questions. What are the Ravens up to? I don't think it's arguable that they are one of the better run franchise, but by how much? Seems like DaCosta is playing chess while others are playing checkers. Before we even discuss players, they retain their entire offense and coordinators. Losing Wink or Roman would be more detrimental to the team than any player outside of Lamar. Agree. Then the players, while I'm a huge fan of Lamar, I think he fell into the best possible situation. Agree. Coach and GM and a staff know what they're doing, built accordingly. A defense that smothers any receivers. Agree, agree, agree. While I hope Lamar stays healthy and breaking ankles for a long time, if he has injury concerns come his contract time, do they resign him to a big deal? Is it a reasonable strategy to draft a skilled, intelligent, athletic, and probably run him into the ground before he gets paid and then not pay him when he can earn a big contract like Joe Flacco? I'm torn. How much time in quarantine, I guess. Or too much time in quarantine, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we, and if you're the general manager or coach, you have to think big picture. But as fans, I think they did a good job in the Michael Jordan documentary. And it's easier as a player. But I think sometimes as a franchise, you just got to live in the moment. And I think too often, we all do this, right? Professionally, personally. What's going to be, what I'm shooting for in 3 years or 5 years? I think that Tom Brady documentary that's coming out, he spoke about always just being present. And I think sometimes just like, let's just enjoy Lamar Jackson for Lamar Jackson. And I wasn't a big Lamar Jackson guy coming out. He has been very fun to watch, and he's been awesome. You know, he's only going into year three. You don't have to pay him till after year five. So just enjoy it. You know, I don't know. I don't even think they know. And let's just see how this year goes. And then if this year goes well and maybe they take a step and win a couple playoff games, let's see how next year goes. I think we're always in a rush. We're doing it with Mahomes. Like, what's he going to make? I don't know. He's going into his fourth year. Why don't they play it out? I mean, what's always the rush to pay everyone at the first possible moment? Now, there's a balance with other, you know, D linemen and wide receivers. You want to kind of pay them early. But I think with quarterbacks, especially one like Lamar, where it's just like no player his style has ever had a dominant 10-year career. I mean, they were running the option last year. Let's just enjoy it and just see where it goes. But I don't think we need to be in a huge rush. And I think sometimes, and I'm not acting like I'm not guilty, but I think sometimes we kind of put the cart before the horse. What are your thoughts on the Bears quarterback situation? Us reasonable fans have known Mitch isn't the guy for a couple years, and I think changing offense the second year stunted his development. Foles and Nagy have a history together from Philly and Kansas City, but it's safe to say Nick struggled as a starter in Jacksonville. I mean, he broke his collarbone week one after throwing one of the best touchdowns, so it's hard for me to judge him coming back to a shitty team. Like, that first game, who knows? What influence, if any, do you think Nagy and Foles' relationship will have on the quarterback race, and do you think Nick is a solution to the passing game or just the 25th guy under center in the last 20 years? Go Bears. It is pretty wild that, you know, one of the more famous flagship franchises of the NFL in a sport that you become famous as a franchise for your quarterback, right? Or your coach. But Seattle really became famous. Russell Wilson, the Niners, Montana Young, right? And then Kaepernick, the Eagles, Donovan McNabb, now Carson Wentz, the Patriots, Brady, and then before that, Bledsoe. The Jets, you think Namath, right? Now you think hopefully Sam Darnold becomes a guy. The Bills, Jim Kelly, Marv Levy. The Miami Dolphins, Marino, Peyton Manning, Favre. Your quarterbacks kind of make your franchise. The Bears have never really had one. How have they never had a franchise quarterback? It's kind of nuts. But to your question, I just think Foles will be the starter. Now, how good is Foles? That's a hell of a question. I don't pretend to have the answer to. He's better than Mitch. And they went 8-8 with Mitch. So, and Chase Daniels. So he's better than that. I have two suggestions for the NFL and would appreciate your opinion. One, steal the concept of conditional protected pick selections from the NBA. Don't they have conditional picks now? Oh, you mean in trades? Steal the concept of loaning players from European soccer. Explanations. One, say if the Browns wanted to trade for Jamal Adams and the Jets want their 2021 first-round pick, the Browns counter by placing a top 10 protection on the first-round pick. So if the Browns pick 1-10, it would keep it and instead give the Jets 2 second-rounders, depending on how it's negotiated. But if the Browns pick from 11-32, then the Jets would get it. I think that would increase the flexibility for teams and increase the number of trades. Absolutely love the idea. Don't quote me on this, but I think there are provisions in the league bylaws against this. Because in the NBA, you can trade for salaries, right? I can trade you picks for salary cap if I have space. The Browns got some heat from the league when they basically bought Brock Osweiler for a second-round pick. The league is not okay with that. That's what makes the NBA-style trades, and I'm in agreement. I think it would add some juice to everything. Right, if we have a super high pick, conditional picks, I'm with you. Two, if Stidham stinks and the Patriots lose his first 6 games, the Patriots can then look to loan off some of their star players to title contenders in return for something. Draft picks. This would be beneficial for title contenders, teams the opportunity to put all the chips toward the middle of the table. A win for bad teams as they can acquire more draft picks. A win for players on bad teams to potentially become a Super Bowl champion. A win for the media. The only losers short-term in all this is probably the fans. I'm not a soccer aficionado, EPL. I've watched a little EPL. I'm a World Cup guy. Now, don't get me wrong. Soccer's growing on me, and as soccer becomes, you know, probably the second biggest sport in America over the last 20 years, which sounds crazy, but it's coming that way. It's, you know, you look at viewership numbers like baseball, basketball, get ready because it's coming for you. I'm not opposed to this line of thinking, but my question would be, so if I'm the Patriots and I'm 2-6, and the trade deadline's there. You're saying I could like loan them Julian Edelman, or loan them Thuney, or loan them Devin McCourty, and get like a 4th-round pick, and then I get them back at the end of the season? That'd be pretty nuts, and I would imagine teams don't necessarily go for that. Though, what's the difference in like the Niners trading a 3rd-round pick for Emmanuel Sanders, and he's a free agent, right? So whether you're loaning a guy or he's becoming a free agent. If you're getting the loan guy or free agent, why do you care? So you might be onto something there. See, that's where I need you guys. You guys got a lot of ideas. I really like the idea of conditional picks, but back to what I said, I'm pretty sure it's against the rules. With Big Ben back and seemingly healthy, what do you think the ceiling is for the Steelers in 2020? In 2018, Ben was playing at a very high level. Maybe threw a few too many interceptions, but you live with that with the style of play. In my opinion, the Steelers' offense could be dangerous. Deontay Johnson is a future star, and I think he'll be another number one wideout for the foreseeable future. The receiving core is solid with Juju and Washington and Claypool. In the addition, I think 1-2 punch of Ebron and McDaniel Vance McDonald is also very solid, and the backfield is stacked with talented running backs. My thing is he's 38 years old. I know he looked pretty good throwing to those guys on Instagram or Twitter or wherever he did it. And I'm with you. They had been playing well in like 16, 17, 18, you know, when he was healthy. They're with Antonio, with Le'Veon, getting Juju, when their defense was good, and their defense is good now. They were a legitimate threat. The 1 year when Le'Veon got hurt against the Patriots, I thought that earlier in that season before what's his name? I don't know, my brain is failing me right now. Ryan Shazier got hurt. I thought they were the best team in the league. And now their defense is kind of back up to par. You would think, last year they trade for the middle linebacker. They add Minka. They got a sweet pass rush. They're kind of getting their Pittsburgh Steelers swag back. It's just you can't win with Duck Hodges or Mason Rudolph. So there's no way Ben is not better than those guys. I get nervous that he's going to get hurt again. And at 38 injuries, we saw what happened last year. An injury turns in, the entire season is over. So that to me is the only thing that I kind of have them red flagged. If he plays solid, they're a lock playoff team. Now, are they going to beat the Ravens and win the division? Probably not. But if you tell me Ben plays 15 games, they're in the playoffs. Which, you're Steelers, you got to be happy with that and then take your chances. What are your thoughts on Jacoby Brissett? Is his NFL future and what the Colts may do with him? I believe he's a top 25 quarterback when on the field, but there isn't much of a difference in the group from 15 to 25. Yeah, I would put him definitely in the 20s. I think he's a slow processor. I think he's a bad athlete. And in 2020, if you can't move, it's tough. You know, and that's going to be, I get they got a really good offensive line in Indy, but Rivers can't move. The day and age of guys not moving, just look at all the good quarterbacks in the NFL. Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Lamar, Deshaun, Jimmy Garoppolo, Wentz, Dak. You know, Tom Brady is the last of a dying breed. Those guys, Eli retired. Breeze is about to be done. You got to have some mobility. I think the day and age of the stiffs are just done. We just don't play the game like that anymore. The rules, the amount of offensive linemen coming into the league. I think Jacoby's okay. I think he's a backup, but that's probably about it. What do the Steelers do if Ben comes back this season and has a very productive year? If we can make the playoffs, do we sign someone like Rosen and let him learn under Ben one more year, or do we shoot for a quarterback in the draft? I know no one feels confident in Mason or Duck. True. Will the Pittsburgh make a trade for a higher pick, or see wherever they land in the draft and see what's available, the quarterback may be available in the future? I think this is back what I was saying about Lamar's contract. I get it's Kevin Colbert's job to think like this, but Ben comes back healthy. If you can get a guy like Rosen to back him up right now, because Mason stinks and Duck's not better either, so you just get a good quarterback room with an aging veteran and just take your shot. And then in the next offseason, maybe you sign a guy like Jameis. Maybe someone becomes available for trade. Think how many quarterbacks are in the NFL now. I think you'll have options. I don't think you need to worry about next draft. Just worry about Ben staying healthy and trying to make a run this year. That, to me, is all I'd be worrying about if I was a Steeler fan. What do we have to do to keep Roethlisberger upright, to keep his body parts intact, and make the playoffs? I mean, you went 8-8 with the worst two quarterbacks that were functional in the league. And it's because your defense is sweet. Well, now you got a functional quarterback. Problem, I just get back. I think he's played full seasons in like four of the last, I heard the stat the other day on the radio, like four of the last nine seasons. Like, he just doesn't stay healthy. And he's coming back from a major injury. I know he shaved his beard, and the mayor of Pittsburgh got mad at him, and it's like, yeah, Roethlisberger shaved his beard. Get over it. Good morning, John. Just wanted to drop in and say thanks for putting out great content. It's easily the top podcast I listen to every week. I guess no question here. I don't want to just read a compliment to boost up my own self-esteem, so we'll move on. Thanks. Appreciate that, Cody. The past few years, the league MVPs have emerged onto the scene out of pretty much nowhere. Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. Can you see this happening again this year with Sam Darnold with an improved offensive line and weapons? Well, what really are his improved weapons? I mean, they drafted a wide receiver in the second round. They have Le'Veon Bell. They lost Robbie Anderson. You know, Randy Moss and Jerry Rice aren't walking through that door. I just don't know if they have enough. I don't think he could put up the stats to win the MVP. Now, could their team be good enough if their defense is better and their offense is just solid with Adam Gase and they're middle of the pack both places and compete to win 8-9 games? I think that's possible. But I would be floored. And I think Sam Darnold one day can win an MVP when they get better players around him. But I think given their roster, it's just a lot to ask. And it's unrealistic. I think it'd be more likely that Josh Allen with, you know, some wide receivers, the running backs, just his ability to run would probably be a sleeper MVP candidate. And that's a pretty big sleeper, right? I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about arm strength of certain quarterbacks. I noticed what they said did not line up with what I had previously thought about those quarterbacks. For example, I think most people are in consensus that Mahomes and Stafford have elite arms, but guys like Jimmy, Dak, Goff, Jameis, I feel like have very mixed things said about their arm strength. Could you give us the tiers of quarterbacks based on arm strength? Yeah, I would just say best pure arm would probably be Stafford. Let's just use baseball. Stafford would be like a Raldis Chapman, can throw like 102. To me, Mahomes is probably more like a Syndergaard or a DeGrom. Like, he can pump like 98, but it's really all his other stuff, like his accuracy, his ability to throw on the move, his arm angles. Like, I don't look at Mahomes throwing like 102 miles an hour. Then I would put guys like Wentz has a huge arm. Josh Allen has a huge arm. I'm just kind of going off the top of my head. I think when you think like middle tier arm strength, you think like a Dak, a Goff. I mean, that's just like solid NFL arm strength. Jimmy. I think Russ has a beautiful deep ball, and when he really wants to put something in it, could throw like 95. I'd say like Jimmy G, Goff, Dak are like 93. I'd say Wentz and Josh Allen are like 99, 100. I mean, they're throwing gas. Just kind of Matt Ryan would be like throwing like 91. 90. Brady, you know, I'd say Brady's peak when he was just humming in this decade was like 96, but he was just dominant, you know, pinpoint. Drew Brees would be like a Maddox, you know, throwing about 90. Deshaun Watson actually is one of those guys that would be like a, you know, like a Roy Halladay. Because he throws like 92, but he's just a playmaker, you know. Cousins would be low 90s. Kyler Murray's got a pretty good arm. Kyler Murray could sling it. Kyler Murray's got a hose. You know what's weird is like Foles, I wouldn't say he throws that hard, but he can throw it really far. Darnold, kind of the same thing. Doesn't throw it really hard, but can throw it really far. Dwayne Haskins, I don't even have no take there. I haven't watched him throw enough. Tua would be probably like 92, 93, but really accurate. Burrow, probably about the same, low 90s. So I'd say Stafford's the cream of the crop, with Wentz and Josh Allen kind of right there. Mahomes kind of gets more hype, but I think Mahomes would be like like one of the Mets guys that is just has the whole package, but he's actually good, but he's like comes through like Madison Bumgarner. You like my baseball analogy there? I thought that was pretty good. That was a good question, because I think we get, you know, that thrown out a lot. You know, most starters in the NFL have average to above arm strength. Like, relative to Stafford, they might not have a strong arm, but even Alex Smith. Like, Alex Smith's arm was fine. It was average. It was functional. That's where I think sometimes weak arm quarterbacks, when they get to the playoffs, because what happens in the playoffs? You usually play in cold weather. Now, if you're playing in a dome, like Phillip Rivers, who now throws, I'd say Phillip Rivers throws about 88 now, but if he's in a dome, he could function, in theory. Now that Brady has moved out of the AFC East, thank God, what do you think of other than the Patriots, do you see taking commanding lead of the division over the next 5 to 7 years? I would lean the Bills, but that a huge, you know, reality with my Bills take is based on Josh Allen continue to improve. If I had to pick one of the three quarterbacks, Tua with a questionable hip, Josh Allen, and Sam Darnold for the next 5-7 years, I'd take Sam Darnold. The Bills are clearly the best roster. Sam Darnold, I think, has the highest ceiling, and the Dolphins feel like they know what they're doing, but still a lot of unknowns. So in the short term, you're definitely betting on the Bills, but I wouldn't count the Jets or the Dolphins out. I think the problem with this question, so many unknowns. Like, is Adam Gase going to be the coach there next year? Like, if they win 6 games, is he going to get fired and Joe Douglas going to hire his own coach? Is Tua even going to be healthy? Can Tua stay healthy? He's been hurt every year he played in college that he started, right? And the Bills, like, if Josh Allen just stays the same, they'll be like your consistent 9-10 playoff team and just be one and done. So you could argue Belichick. I know it pains you to hear this, but he could be floating around there if he gets decent quarterback plays. He's the best coach in the division. He's the best coach in the league. But I think the division's wide open. I think short term, the Bills are the clear favorite. But the next 3 or 4 years, you know, it's whoever gets the most offensive weapons, whoever can find pass rushers, whatever coach kind of emerges. Like, is Brian Flores a really good coach? Everyone in the media acts like Brian Flores is Don Shula. He won 4 games. Now, I get it, he did it with a crappy roster, but he won 4 games. No coach in NFL history has gotten more credit for winning 4 games than Brian Flores. And rightfully so. Traded away everybody. But it did lead them to the 5th overall pick. I wanted to get your opinion on the potential Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith in Nolan's multi-defense. They look like superheroes as it is and have all the measurables. But do you think Nolan can get all the talent on the field? Full disclosure, a little biased. I don't think Mike Nolan's that good. I'm a big Mike McCarthy fan. I like the Cowboys roster. Love Jerry Jones. I get that Mike Nolan kind of made Mike McCarthy's career. Made him an offensive coordinator. A year later, he gets the Packer job. I just can't believe they hired Mike Nolan to be the defensive coordinator. Like, the defense that they were running with the Saints, they wouldn't name him the defensive coordinator in the Saints. They chose Dennis Allen. Now, I get that Mike McCarthy can't hire another defensive coordinator. All these guys have jobs, but I don't know. Now, Mike Nolan's good with linebackers. They drafted Patrick Willis. Patrick Willis was really good. Those guys are going to be good. To me, my bigger question mark is, now, they also hired Jim Tomsula. He's a really good defensive line coach. Can Mike Nolan dial up coverages? I'm not worried about that. If those two guys are healthy, they're going to kick ass. And their pass rush with Tomsula is going to be good. But the NFL and winning in the NFL is about playing chess. And to be a good defensive coordinator, it's about calling the right coverages against top offenses. And look who they got to play. Doug Peterson, Kyle Shanahan, Russell Wilson, Sean McVay. Like, it is a big chess game. Is Mike Nolan good enough? Because the head coach is going to be, I know he's technically not calling plays, but he's an offensive guy. So it's Mike Nolan's got, you know, full reins to do whatever the hell he wants. Is he good enough? I'd have to Google it. I don't think he's been a defensive coordinator in a long time. When's the last time Mike Nolan's been a DC? I'm actually kind of interested right now. I know he's not a head coach. When I think Mike Nolan, I think position coach. And he's a good position coach, but then he becomes the Broncos defensive coordinator for a year, then the Dolphins defensive coordinator for 2 years, then the Falcons defensive coordinator. Okay. So he hasn't been a defensive coordinator since 2014. Linebackers coach with the Chargers, took a year off, and then the Saints linebacker coach the last 2 years. I don't know. I'm not trying to be a hater. I just being honest. Big fan, I'd love to hear your thoughts on Kyle Whittingham and the disappointing Utah seasons ever since the Sugar Bowl. They have been pretty sad, but always in the range of winning the conference and choking. Yeah, I'm going to push back. I mean, they were just in the Pac-12 championship. Within this decade, they were not a Power 5 program. They've moved to the Pac-12. They have easily become a top 2 or 3 program in the Pac-12. They are producing a ton of NFL guys. They are constantly beating programs that they have no... They shouldn't be able to beat USC. They shouldn't kick UCLA's ass. And they do. They shouldn't be able to beat, or you know, I guess they didn't beat Oregon, but the Washington, like they are, without Utah in the Pac-12, Pac-12 would be in trouble. You know, thank God for Utah, or else it'd just be like Oregon and Washington some years. To say they've been a disappointment, I got to push back. I think Kyle Whittingham's been fantastic. I mean, I think he's been awesome. I mean, they win 9-10 games every year. They produce, I think they had like 7 or 8 guys drafted. Think how many Utah guys you see in the NFL. They're all over. And not just all, they're on good teams. I know there's a very broad question, but Brady or Bill, who's more responsible for the dynasty? In my opinion, Brady. I could go into crazy detail if you want, but only if you reply. LOL. By the way, love the pod. You know, it's going to sound like a cop-out, and I was taught early in my radio career, never sit on the fence, have an opinion. To me, this one is like, I think it's fair to say they both played a huge role. You can't win without a good quarterback, that's proven, and you can't win with a shitty head coach. And when you put one of the best quarterback ever with the best coach ever, like, here's what I know. Brady couldn't start at Michigan. Here's what I also know. Bill Parcells couldn't have won Super Bowls without Belichick. He admitted as such. He said that Bill Belichick devised the game plans to shut down Walsh and the Niners, which they did twice on their path to Super Bowls. You hear Montana talk, Walsh isn't around to talk anymore, but Montana and those Niners team talk about playing those New York Giants teams. Their schemes were insane. Belichick was going to win. Now, would he have won 6? I don't know. Probably not. Definitely not. But would he have won a couple? He would have found a Jimmy Garoppolo. He would have found a Deshaun Watson. He would have found someone. He did find Jimmy. He would have found a quarterback eventually. He's just too dynamic of a coach. Just like Tom, I'm a big believer the cream always rises. Tom would have succeeded. But for whatever reason, like, he couldn't start at Michigan. Now, he overcame it, but like, what Belichick was going to be good. Here's what I know. Belichick was going to be an all-time great. Again, 6 Super Bowls, probably not, but he would have won a couple. Pretty clear. Because we've all watched his games, and the shit he does is insane, right? No one argues that. Where Brady, like, what if Brady got drafted instead of by Belichick in the 6? What if, like, the Arizona Cardinals picked him? Or the Jaguars picked him? Or just some terrible franchise picked him? The Lions. Do we even know who Tom Brady is? And I'm the biggest Tom Brady fan you'll meet. I have nothing but admiration for the guy. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time. He was more dependent on the circumstances than Belichick. Because those first several years, their offense or their defense was unstoppable. And Belichick's moves as a GM, just look at the 20 years. The guy's a genius. And I'm talking about a guy that misses on some draft picks. Doesn't even faze him. He makes the best trades, always. He always has. So I would probably lean Belichick if I was going to get off the fence. I'd go like 55-45. Belichick over Brady. So that's kind of a cop-out, but I'll lean Belichick because he would have found a quarterback. And there's no guarantee if Tom Brady, instead of drafted pick 199, I'm just going to pick some, you know, 207 to the Lions. I mean, is Tom Brady just some good-looking guy that used to play in the league? Probably. Appreciate everyone listening. 3 and Out podcast. Thanks for going to the Apple iTunes, leaving your reviews. And I just want to say I appreciate everybody and have a great... Is it Memorial Day weekend? Is it Memorial Day weekend? I think it might be. Yeah, it is Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everybody. Stay safe. Enjoy the weekend. See you.